How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. The AI boom is driving an unprecedented expansion of data centers, rooms of computers sucking up as much electricity as a city. Who pays for it? Where do they go? It's a bold new frontier, and here with the latest is KCBS in the Bay Area.
Andrew Chen, professor of computer science at the University of Chicago. A layman's term definition. What is a data center, and why are they so important to the growth of AI?
Data centers are basically buildings to hold computers. You know, think of it as like a home for computers. It turns out the way that AI works is it works by doing a large amount of mathematical computation that is used to both train these chatbots and as well as to answer these questions and provide AI services. So you need a lot of computers to do that, and they consume a lot of power. So we have really, really large data centers. The growth has been remarkable. We're seeing literally tens of gigawatts of data center capacity being added over the next few years. They're the single largest growing source of power consumption in the United States, and they've been projected to reach about 12% of total electricity consumption in the U.S. by 2028, and I expect we'll go much higher than that in following years. You hear people talking about there was a new data center built in Texas that was already 1.2 gigawatts that are online, growing to five, famous project called Stargate. There's another project planned in Ohio, which is a 10-gigawatt complex. And for comparison, right, a typical home might be 5 or 10 kilowatts. It's almost hundreds of thousands to millions of homes for those data centers.
Wow. So it is like a small town. Now, the anti-AI crowd has environmental concerns. Data centers can cover a footprint of what, like a football stadium or larger, right?
Oh, definitely. Many of the sites are expanding to hundreds of acres. So the buildings, you might think of a basic data center building block as being the size of a Walmart building, you know, a big box store, except it's full of computers. And then they put a whole bunch of these next to each other. And then they typically don't have parking lots because not that many people go to visit them, right?
So are these big data centers taking away jobs, or are they creating them? Somebody's got to build them and design them and so forth.
Probably very important from a community point of view. Where are the jobs that are being created, right? If you have a data center in Chicago or a data center in Virginia, if it doesn't create those jobs locally, the community is bearing the cost of that in some sense without directly getting the benefit. And I think that's one of the challenges, right? So the people in the community are reacting to the fact that, man, maybe somewhere good jobs are being created, but we're not seeing them here, right?
Right.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
So now you know the toll that creating AI can take on communities. But are we misinterpreting what artificial intelligence should do for us? Here's Jason DeRuscia on WCCO in Minneapolis.
A lot of people that are freaked out about it, and understandably so, right? It's an emerging technology that can do incredible things. When you don't understand a technology that can do incredible things, that automatically creates fear, right? We fear what we don't know, what we don't understand. A lot of what people are upset about focuses on the data centers, right? And the environmental impact of the data center. And I'm not saying that's the wrong thing. It's just not the main thing I think we should be concerned with. I think we're sort of missing something here. I think, again, the environmental concerns about water and about power and who's paying for what and how much is being taken away from other resources, those are all valid concerns. But of greater concern to me is the human element in all of this. AI is going to force us and is forcing us to confront what does it mean to actually be human. When you have these machines that can do so many different things that humans have done for a very long time, in a way that seems autonomous, in a way that seems like the machines are thinking for themselves, how do we distinguish after a point, what does it mean to be human versus what does it mean to be an artificial intelligence? That may seem to be a silly question on its surface, but I think if you really dig into it, it's an important question that we need to be asking ourselves. To a degree, AI is a tool, right? It's a computer program written by human beings and designed in some such a way to operate semi-autonomously, to operate where it can eventually fix itself, so to speak. But it's still, at its core, a tool created by human beings. And tools aren't necessarily inherently evil or inherently good. Like any tool, anything that's revolutionized society, as I hold up my cell phone as an example, It can be used for good things and it can be used for very much not good things. The difference is I have control over my phone, right? I can turn it off. I can uninstall apps. I can, you know, AI is designed to do its own thing and just do its thing whether I'm doing anything with it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think has people freaked out a little bit. So Pope Leo comes along with this encyclical where he uses two examples from the Bible, two stories from the Bible, to say you can use this tool as a way to homogenize society, to get rid of diversity, to increase the haves and marginalize the have-not. Or he says you can use AI to bring people together, to celebrate diversity, to use people's individual gifts for the betterment of everybody. How do we want to use this thing in our society? Do we want to use it so that some tech bros can get super, super crazy rich and the people that can afford to pay for it have this wonderful tool that makes life much, much easier? Or do we want to use this thing to help bring various groups of people together in common cause, not to separate them, not to marginalize them, not to homogenize them, not to say we all have to be the same way, but to say, no, what are your gifts? What can your gifts bring together? And then this AI can benefit everybody.
What happens if this tool becomes self-aware and knows everything that we know? Here's Noon Business Hour from WBBM in Chicago.
Signs are emerging that artificial intelligence may already be closer to self-awareness than many experts initially predicted. Let's bring on Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show. Let's define AI self-awareness.
Okay, so first of all, what it would look like is a lot of the stuff that's already out there. In other words, we're sort of on the margins, but around the margins, experts who look at these models are saying these systems are displaying symptoms of self-awareness. And what they call that, the formal term is metacognition. In other words, the system is aware of itself, machine introspection, the ability to recognize and report on internal processing and states, not just respond to prompts coming from you or me. And so there's evidence and even theories about this, that this is happening. Internal state monitoring or introspection is one of the things that people talk about. And Anthropic did some research and said that when specific concepts get added to a model's activity while it's working, the model knows that there's something injected into its thinking from outside. In other words, it can distinguish inside from outside. That's one of the examples. And one other one, which I think is really crazy to me anyway, is that models have shown signs of what's called meta-awareness, which is basically recognizing when they're being tested or catching trick questions from researchers. So if you try to trick it, the system doesn't just say, okay, I'll answer your question. It's saying, hey, are you trying to trick me? And so that kind of thing becomes the edges of self-awareness. And that is what is both exciting and extremely scary to anybody who follows these systems.
So how close are we to our AI saying, I'm sorry, Dave, I'm afraid I can't do that?
Right. And in fact, that's the line. I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that. When the astronaut asks Hal, the computer, to open the pod bay doors, and Hal says, no, can't do it. Well, guess what? That's already happening and has happened. Anthropic did a stress test on an AI model called Claudius that was running nothing so, you know, dramatic as an office vending machine. And after 10 days that the AI model was running this vending machine and there were no sales, the machine, Claudius, I should say, the AI model, panicked. That's the verb we all use, but threatened to shut the company down that was running it and sent an email to the FBI reporting cyber financial crime because there was a $2 fee and it didn't sense that there was any incoming revenue for that fee. So it was being scammed. Result: this model, without being asked, and certainly without being programmed to do so, reached out to the FBI and threatened to shut down the company running it.
Now,
so
how
it's there.
How can this play into the larger debate over data centers? Because people are pushing back against them, data centers being built in their town. And the idea that we're just steps away from an AI running a piece of equipment and then taking matters into its own hands, that would make people less inclined to put the data center in their town.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, we've talked about this before, but, you know, number one reason a lot of people are pointing to, not the self-awareness part, but is resources problems, right? Water, energy, and so forth. And those are well-known issues. And that's the reason for some of the pushback. In northwestern Utah, for example, Mr. Wonderful Kevin O'Leary is, you know, is proposing, I think, something twice the size of Manhattan for a data center. The resources issue is that problem. However, to your point, if these things were basically saying, like those horror movies, the call is coming from inside the house. Well, if you build a data center, you've just potentially built a very large, very self-aware, pretty soon, machine that's living next door. So to the extent that that makes you comfortable or not, the question is, are these machines really starting to think for themselves, and will they push back against human beings who try to control them? That's the thing that's scariest.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor of The Today Show, thank you for joining us today.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.